But to be honest, the conversation wasn't really as
pithy.
Like, I don't know, explosive as it was, like, expected to be. It's like the ultimate, like, killer of religions versus, like, the ultimate person to, like, put meaning behind religion. And it just came down to, like, Harris, like, you know, Peterson's going on, telling all these stories, and it's all, you know, brilliant, of course, but then Harris is just saying, yeah, that's all good, but then, like, that's not what his problem is. His problem is when people say, like, all right, this is literally how it is, and if you don't believe this, these, like, facts about reality, then I'm going to have to kill you because this is what my religion tells me. And Peterson didn't really have a response to that. He was just like, yeah, no, I understand that's all bad. But then also, religion, like, does this, and he's like, so, like, I don't know, it was, like, two different views that never really converged, and also, like, never really conflicted either. It was, it was weird,
ooh,
like,
so exciting.
Oh my God.
Sort of, like, unsettling, almost.
Yay.
At first I want to say 140, but I'm like, yeah, that's so much for a dog.
Hi, buddy.
I guess this is nice. Fur really looks pretty large.
Yeah.
This looks really tight. Is this tight for you?
What's the, how many dogs on this dog?
Fight on him?
What's the background of that dog?
That's for fleas. It says that.
Oh, yeah, the flea collar is always right up against there.
It has to be against the skin.
Yeah.
Does he sing "Everything is Awesome"?
He does.
Is awesome.
Actually, he sings "Everything is Terrible" when I leave the house. Why he's here.
Why he's here. Right.
Everything in the world is falling apart.
She left the house.
Can hear you at all.
Do you trim this kind of a dog, or just let him do their thing with that bear?
No,
you just let him do their
thing. You're not supposed to, but
give him a good brush at it.
You know?
It's like a bear.
He's the size of a bear.
I mean, seriously, it could be a bear.
Hey, Dan.
Yes.
If I saw it sitting down like that from behind outside, I think it might be a bear.
Get you can get these martingale collars that they're just like a regular collar, but when you pull, it pulls a piece up, and then it's a little easier. Yeah. It doesn't, like, hurt them in any way.
I've seen them. Yeah, they attach to the leash, right?
They're just like a regular collar the same way. They just have an extra little piece that pulls out.
Nice.
I got a nice one on life for $15. It has a little metal plate that has
their name. I do, but I'm not getting up. For nothing.
My mother gave a great speech at the end of work today. I thought you would have liked.
Oh.
I invited her to the Paul Hederman thing coming up. And she's like, oh, she's going to speak about the same shit as every other time. I'm like, yep, that's what happens. Like, oh, yeah, sure, come on, there's nothing happening. Give me your money. Come over here. I needed to pay to go into the desert to get my teachings to come back, tell you there's nothing. Yes. So I'm like, oh, my God.
That's great. She went off. Nice.
Like, oh, I think I might like to go.
Yeah. Obviously. She's inspired. Well,
she's honest. You know.
My mom's like, oh, I didn't just think about it.
Pat, do you want a chair?
Yeah, I do. Thank you.
I wasn't aware of this local Saturday night speakers group, you know, here in Doylestown.
Did you see the schedule? He's doing like two events.
I did. Like, I did see it.
He's in New York earlier. I'm like, man,
two of those days he's doing an afternoon and then an evening thing, like quite some distance away.
Yeah. Sorry. Here's my mom ragging on him for doing nothing. This guy, she's putting the work.
then he's flying to do talks in, I think, the UK and Dublin.
I don't know if he can handle two a day.
That's what I thought. I was like, hopefully we're in the morning session, but we're like 8:30. Yeah. Like, I'll be sleeping by then.
He'll be like, oh, you've heard it all before.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to try to go.
Of course.
Yeah.
Can't bring a dog.
Well, that group looks like, the picture of that group, they had this nice, like, buffet spread or something.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I think they snack like fiends before the actual
like,
speaker.
I don't know. Is there snacks? Okay, I'll go.
Yeah. Seems like... Really?
Did they charge money? I didn't see on the flyer.
Oh, that's
bucks.
Funny.
It's 20 bucks.
$20?
Maybe I
yeah.
pulled that
an
in.
AA.
Yeah, it's an AA or NA or something, you know. It's a Saturday night speakers meeting. They held them regularly. That's a place to go on a Saturday
I
night.
I still get in. Sure. To make confessionals or something.
Yeah. Well, that'll be fun. It'll be, you know, hopefully it'll be more of a captive and interesting audience than we were able to attract here at Pebble Hill.
Yeah, I wasn't there for the last one.
Yeah, it's pretty thinly attended.
And there'd be a lot of heavy breathing on your tape.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah. We'll just tell people it's Nan. They won't know. They can't see him.
Your meditation technique.
Yeah.
Heavy breathing and good posture.
Holotropic
breathing. We're just doing holotropic breath work.
Kundalini yoga. Mm-hmm.
Which could be me after walking a few blocks with Nan.
Whoa.
There's fruit loops. Make it sound good.
And glue.
I like that email you sent to that other guy. Bethlehem or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I like your response at the end. I was like, ooh, looks like Jeff's enlightened now.
Wow, it was mystical, right?
No claims to lava to enlightenment.
I know.
Pretty soon we'll be
moving right along.
Charging money and then touching students. We'll have a real group.
You want to get this show on the road. You know, wear interesting jewelry and, you know, bleed a little bit.
I forget that he said he was going to come down here to.
He threatened to
join us.
Yeah.
He threatened to.
I doubt it, but.
What was his initial thing? Because you said he changed. I never saw the original one.
Oh.
Subtle change.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, his first. You know, a little biography, he was referring to being in possession of, you know, spiritual knowledge and
psychological
knowledge and, you know.
Comprehensive was the word he used.
Comprehensive. Yeah, comprehensive, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was the kind of thing that you would do if you were making a claim about yourself or your experience, your credentials, be they psychotherapeutic or so-called spiritual. So it just felt like, you know, they'd call him on it, which is easy enough to do. And I didn't expect any...
He's pretty friendly, though. Yeah.
Absolutely friendly, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's
and
nice.
The real deal, then.
Well, he's enough of an adult, right, to be undefended and take the time to offer a cordial reply. Yeah. So that was like, hey, you're not half bad.
That's the state we're at, is like, if you're mature enough to respond and not be a total, like, asshole.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, most of the so-called enlightened claimers in this area, you know, they fold under the slightest amount of pressure. But that's cool too.
I don't think there were any of the whatever teachers, gurus that were listed in the bottom that you had any particular inclination towards, were there?
Oh, that group?
Yeah.
No. No, it's always better, you know, to dismiss the whole lot of them than to get excited about someone like you might get excited about a, you know, football or baseball star or something. You know. But these loyalties that we have a tendency to imbue or invest in, you could say that they're, you know, part of the immortality project. I was talking to Leif today at length, which was a lot of fun. And he was talking about existential psychotherapy. Yalom was one of the names, and Ernest Becker was another one of the names. And those, I guess, men and women in that field kind of get underneath, let's say, some of the more superficial symptoms of our codependent anxiety to look at, you know, the more intimate conundrum of existence.
Yeah.
And that's great. I mean, that takes it a little, you know, a little further down the road. It's a little more intimate. And I think it was Yalom, Irwin Yalom, that was saying, you know, think of your life really as an immortality project. How to cope with the, you know, rudimentary insecurity of existence and facing the terrible fact that you really don't know. We'll wait.
Speaking of, you really don't know.
Yeah.
Like Groucho Marx.
It is, yeah. Immortality was the magic word of the day. Down comes the duck, you know, and everyone wins $200. And you really don't know. No one knows what this is or how it came about, where it's heading, if anywhere. And, of course, we're full to the brim with exotic theories, whether they be, you know, the religious idolatry that Sam Harris calls into question, or that same religious idolatry that Peterson may value for its organizing principles. Well, when you strip away the commonly held superstitions that speak incoherently to the actual texture of firsthand experience, you have a mortality and immortality issue to deal with that, you know, you never asked for. And how lovely it is to kind of swoop down from the lofty heights of our, you know, issues, where there can be, of course, many, you know, being swarmed by bats or gnats or swans or anything that would swarm you, like phenomenal, right? Phenomenal expression. Yeah, and when you get underneath it all and you can't rely on the truths that you've been told or the lies that you've been sold, well, yeah, you got some really nice adult material, right, to work with. Thus the coining the phrase, I guess, the Immortality Project. Hmm. And it's fun how that shows up, you know, as one ages, let's say, right? And there's a shift in the chronology of your life from all the things that you're going to become to all the ways in which you're going to decline.
Stepping back.
Yeah, right? We're not quite sure when that hump occurs. You might not even notice it when it does occur. But sooner or later, you'll have to kind of cope with, well, I used to be on the, you know, the waxing side of 60 or 70 or 50 or 90. I used to be on the waxing side. And now, oh, my goodness, I'm on the waning side of whatever that hump is or wherever that hump is. So you're right. You start thinking about or considering whatever it is that you consider as concerns the artifacts of your life, let's say. Yeah. If you have no children, you know, but you have a portfolio of photographs and videos and books and memoirs and memories and things, no one cares. It's just dumpster material. So your life, in a sense, can be erased while you're still living it. Then it becomes a Twilight Zone episode.
Someone bought that little place that I trashed you.
Oh, really?
And it was funny. The guy called me. He's like, you sure you don't want any of this stuff? He's like, there's like your high school diploma.
Oh, you left stuff behind.
Oh, I left all kinds of shit.
Oh,
I'm
my
like,
God.
No, that place is supposed to be just demolished. Like, yeah. Sorry. But it was pretty funny. He's like, it was like, I probably left my college like diploma. I just left everything.
Oh.
There's like pictures.
Oh, that's so
he
funny.
Just walked away, like, except for stuff you knew you wanted. Right?
I was like, don't read the diary just because you'll be really disturbed. But
yeah. Don't read that.
Not because I care.
But. Yeah.
You could have brought it here. It would have been fun.
If you read the diary, like demons, demons will come.
Meeting on Mondays. For her
yeah,
diary.
We could have another.
Yeah, that's right. Diary, maybe the diary one. Readings. Everyone has to wear a tinfoil hat.
The early diary readings.
Pretty boring, actually.
I mean, it's nice to have, you know, like Peterson wears so well, right, with such eloquence and elegance, a... you know, creative and dynamic, entertaining vocabulary and portfolio that speaks about, you know, the nature of existence or the practicality of the maturation of the species, pitfalls to avoid, the time and place for adulthood, and how that, you know, speaks to the... current milieu and in the institutional milieu of, you know, human life, whether it's the university, you know, or the job or the marriage or the this or the that. And so he's, you know, he's a kind of a living lullaby of things that you can relate to and be tickled by. Now, whether he, you know, is capable of getting underneath all of those playful memes to linger in the bosom of the existential or the immortality project.
I'm gonna say no.
Yeah.
Because he said those poems were completely incoherent.
Those poems were, you know, writhing with ecstatic vision, and he couldn't pick up on it. You know, he dismissed them. Yeah, he dismissed them out of hand.
Do. It's funny. You really start to see. You're like, oh, another genius just trashed. They don't get it.
Yeah,
they just don't get it.
I know, like, another genius.
No,
that that's right.
Oh, they must have been bipolar. Yep. No, that was it.
Yeah.
Because you're just right. An idiot.
Yeah, you're a genius idiot. Oh well.
Yeah, he's like the Peterson programming was like on full display in that conversation, the most recent one.
Yeah.
He like, you know, went on and explained how there was, or Sam was talking about how there was this tribe that was like really into witchcraft, and they like just were always trying to cast spells on other people in the tribe, and like you know, any like outcome that was like favorable or unfavorable was always thought to be like the result of magic. And,
yeah.
You know, and he's like, yeah, and even the most dangerous people were like, you know, your nuclear family relatives. And he's like, you can even say like, and then there's a psychological reason for that. And Pearson's like, yeah, there is. That's because like, you know, who has hurt you most emotionally? Those closest to you. And it's like,
yeah,
just, you know, even like in Machina, he just is like still like just doing the
yeah.
Peterson thing constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. It's a loop.
Yeah.
It's a loop.
Everybody has their frame, and that's just shit goes in that frame and comes out that frame and always sort of looks the same.
Yep.
Well, and people get into this whole dynamic of, you know, sort of an academic thing, you know, that they bring information and material and examples and all that stuff. Remember Joseph Campbell? Remember The Power of Myth? And he would get very poetic and all that stuff, but still, I wondered, it always just seemed so academic, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, but maybe it's because, you know, I remember Bill Moyers interviewing him and stuff. And, there was, and then I think I have a podcast of very long interview, series of interviews by some other guy. It was all, you know, it was a little revelatory, but, you know, it could only go so far.
You know. Yeah.
Very active.
Yeah.
That con photoshopped on the baby Jesus was fun.
That
was good.
Yeah.
Should put a little sweater vest.
Little
on.
Sweater vest, yeah.
What a really.
That's right.
Caught it home.
That was fun.
Sheep's clothing is actually sweaty.
Really.
Beware of sweater vests.
Watch out. Just watch out.
They're wearing a sweater vest and they're singing, "Everything is awesome."
Awesome.
Run.
Yeah, run. Yeah. Don't light a match
those
in that same room.
Master builders.
Well, you know, rationality is kind of like molasses. You know, everything gets covered in a really thick, sticky, impossible to escape syrup. So, you know, that's how you could say that is the nature of mind, is the usurping of the textural, vibratory revelation of experience, enrolling it into a field of meaning and implication. And that, whatever mind is or isn't, can do that. The enrolling of irrational reality in a field of so-called implied meaning. Well, that is mind. It's not like there is a mind. There is no mind. There's the curious engagement of a complex set of symbology and mythology that gathers up the irrationality of present experience and imposes meaning, so-called meaning, upon it. Now, what's doing that? We could say, well, the mind. Well, like, but there is no mind. There's just this curious observation of a hypnosis that's occurring. So, well, what's responsible for that? You know. It's funny. Anytime we name a thing, whether it's something like mind or, you know, new age folks might use the word heart. Excuse me. You know, then you're, you know, you're back into the childish expectation of emotionality, sentimentality, you know, compassion, right? You know, a carnal hunger, right? I was like a little clip from Richard Rose. One of his students in the room said to him, well, we heard you say that, you know, nobody here is doing any real work around here. You know, so that's fun. That's like the teacher just broadcasting out that all of you slob seeker fucker useless, you know, aren't really interested in this. You're not really doing any work. So the question was, well, what work could we be doing? Guess what the first thing Richard Rose said was? Celibacy. I was like, are you fucking crazy? I mean, what? What? That was the best you had to offer was celibacy, as if everyone's so-called spiritual aspiration or curiosity is actually compromised by the fact that they might on occasion put their genitals to good use. You got to be out of your mind.
That doesn't include masturbation, right?
No, you're safe.
No.
That's okay?
Well,
oh, all right. Sure.
No, I think he meant it to include.
No, completely.
I thought I felt he meant it to include self-soothing.
What a jerk!
That was the first Buddhist split, right?
When you have dreams.
On the original, our hats were like having wet dreams, and then the other like set was like, oh, you broke the whatever rule about not having sex.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, that was like the first thing.
God.
They like unseated like 500 of the first R hats because they were busting loads in their sleep.
Yeah. It's not like the first thing you're made of is the program to reproduce. What else do you think you're made of?
Yeah.
You know? You're made of the program to reproduce. You're the product of it. That's what this is made of.
We're so like
and all of a sudden we're saying, No, I'm going to be whatever, withholding or modest or celibate, as if I can, you know, flip God the bird and say, well, you're not going to get any reproduction out of this guy.
It's like I was watching some YouTube thing, don't ask why, where people were at a zoo and these, they were apes, large apes, started just going at it, you know, and they're like, kids, oh my, like everyone was like flipping out.
Yeah.
I mean, they're bigger apes.
Yeah, yeah.
You see their butt, you know, it's kind of,
it's not
like a little, like some other animal where you're like, we could just ignore that.
Yeah.
But everyone was flipping out. I mean, it was
nice.
Really funny. It's like, that's, what are you going to do? That's what they do.
There it is.
Yeah. Far out. I was disappointing that, you know, it was disappointing, not necessarily surprising, that Richard Rose, for all of his, you know, spiritual prowess, would say something so pilgrimish, you know?
It's because they know it's so unattainable.
Likewise, you
made that number one, you're
farmer.
Like, you guys are all fucked.
What the heck is a bully farmer again anyway?
Yes, please.
He lived on a farm in Virginia or something, and he bullied everyone. That's what he was, you know.
Told them to be celibate. It worked, because we all know they're not going to be. Then you tell them they're bad.
Yeah, bully for you, yeah. I know.
Oh, good Lord.
I thought that was about pitfalls.
Student of Michael Vick.
Green pit bull.
Yeah.
It just seems so insane. It's not about the present moment. I mean, you know, why say anything instructive like that?
Well, I mean, that, you know, shows you the... kind of reveals, you know, the quality of Richard Rose's revelation and or his capacity for relating to other people, and the cosmology that may have influenced his own immortality project, right? To lay a trip on
maybe it was
himself or other people to suggest that, you know, enjoying what you've got, either with consenting with another or in the privacy of your own world, is somehow interfering with liberation. I mean, hello?
Could you have been setting them up to fail so that they would then say,
oh, geez, that's a long,
you know how the gurus do that to people? Set you up to fail.
Yeah, but geez.
To try to teach you
that's
something.
About as good as being like, number one, don't eat. You're like, okay.
I don't really think you have to. I mean, it's not a bad idea, but you don't really have to add any more fuel to the fire as concerns failing.
I know, right?
This will take care of
that's
it.
That's true.
I wonder if it was like towards the end of his life when he had Alzheimer's and started to say things.
Maybe.
He couldn't do it anymore. He didn't want anybody else to.
Maybe his inner guilt-laden Christian, you know, ethos was coming out as he was declining. Hard to know. But, I mean, anyone that could be held accountable for creating SIG and TAT just can't be that, you know, useful.
Was that for him while he was alive?
I don't know, really. Maybe TAT was. Maybe SIG was. I'm not sure who came first, SIG or TAT. It's the chicken or the egg. And how did Bart Marshall end up on the, you know, on the dais?
Was it students, teachers?
Yeah.
SIG is a self-inquiry group, and they get together and all compete mercilessly to see who the next person is that will claim the end of seeking.
They treat it like a test.
It's kind of, it's like...
I got my certification.
Yeah.
It happened on July 29th last year. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
Hanging on the wall.
Yeah, it's the
essentially,
you know, it's the foolishness of you know, claim making. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of the, you know, the dilemma of the immortality project is that we frame ourselves you know, based on, well, total heresy. That heresy is oh yeah, I was born. Oh yeah, I've had some life experience, and I actually have had some success as concerns, you know, relief from suffering. Maybe I've had a cathartic experience of some kind, and I can tell you all about it and the nuances of it and. You know, why you might want to subscribe to my 6-month program where I can almost, if not absolutely, guarantee you that you can enjoy the same success that I have. Ka-ching. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When, you know, if that insight had really taken root, and it may very well have in many of these, you know, purveyors, you know, these compassionate snake oil salespersons, if an insight of that magnitude might have actually taken root, then you just wonder why it becomes commercialized, objectified, monetized, and becomes part of the, well, the despairing culture of commerce. I mean, if you've really got something transcendent in your back pocket, and despite Richard Rose's admonitions, you know, is that enlightenment in your pocket or are you just happy to see me? Right? If you've really got something in your back pocket, well, you know, shut the fuck up. or give it away. As if there were something that you could possibly be in possession of, or that you could even assist somebody else with. Oh, I can help. With what?
Yeah, I remember reading a forum post like 10 years ago, and it was some dude, and English wasn't his first language, but it was some website about awakening.
Yeah.
And the first comment was like, this has happened to me. Like, I've experienced all this. How do I monetize this?
Yeah.
Very first question.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Can we work on a brand, like, right now?
Yeah.
One of the responses, like,
get a logo.
Due to that question, I have trouble believing you, but you might want to consider a blog or something. You could tell others your story or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And his response was something like, awakening or not, it's nice to sleep on a softer bed. Like,
I'm now that's practical.
Some shit, and I sleep on rocks, you know.
Yeah.
Like, well, okay.
So the spontaneous arising of the imposition of meaning it's good to have a dog ear in. Tucker. The pouring forth of right, the habit of meaning making is incredible. I mean, try to give it a rest.
It's hard.
It is, right? Yeah. It's funny. It's hard. It shouldn't necessarily have to be, but it can be felt as challenging or difficult to, you know, just kind of quietly and effortlessly sidestep the enduring habit of meaning making. It's fun to play with, really. And because by doing so, even failing, which is likely to occur, and fine, of course, you can begin to see that, let's just say, prior to the imposition of meaning, the enrollment, right, of meaning, There's this stuff. There's this irrefutability that is not, there's no teleprompter. It's like you're the one that's, you know, lending the teleprompter to the otherwise irrational and liberated nature of being.
Well, you know, I think maybe that's why nature opens a path more readily than if you're sitting there in a classroom, or you have work to do and require some thought. And I mean, you know, it's like,
well, if that were true, how many times in the last week have you committed yourself to nature?
He only means like 70 and sunny.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
right. Or at least in the.
Let's get more specific.
Yeah.
In a transparent container. So.
Right.
Well, that's right.
If I'm in a bubble, it's temperature controlled.
Not in the terrarium I'm actually living in, but in some other terrarium.
Yeah.
So that means everyone in Hawaii should be completely enlightened. And if you ask them, they'll tell you that they are.
Bugs. It's not perfect.
It's not perfect.
Don't worry, they'd be happy.
Yeah. I went to sit outside to come back from Peru, and I'm like, well, I need a mosquito net. I'm like, going back inside.
Yeah.
I was one of them on a tropical island, too, so I thought it through for a minute.
Yeah.
A minute.
How quickly we are food. Yeah. You know, the terrarium is not seeing you as being necessarily on top of the food chain. You know, your sweat and glands and blood are, you know, gourmet.
We are feasting.
Yeah. So a sense of self, the curious way in which, you know, individuation and the myth of continuity or selfing, if you want to, you know, borrow that term, occurs, is really quite mystical. We can, you know, denigrate or enter into like an adversarial relationship with what might be referred to as the genesis of self. And that might be a mistake. It might be short-sighted because the genesis of self is mystical.
Yeah. You can't really nail it down.
No.
And that's why I'm, you know, I'm into this thing where I'm like looking at, you know, dark matter and, you know.
Why not? Yeah.
Robert Lanza stuff and all that jazz. And,
no, he's like the theory of everything, remember?
Yeah, the biocentrism.
Yeah.
And in the book that I'm reading, he goes, I guess he co-wrote it with this other guy who's probably a minor partner in that. But he goes off on some spiritual experience he had, and I'm like, yeah. Let's get back to
that. <Yeah. laughs> Don't try to lure me back in. We've got scientific knowledge to come in here. Come on.
That's right. Yeah, it's funny because that's normally would not be like that.
Well, the
at least not the way I thought of it.
The involuntary thirst. The involuntary insatiability for meaning making, both as the projector of meaning and as the recipient of meaning, is very interesting because you, you know, from that perspective, you're kind of fucked coming and going. Because it feels like you're the projector, can feel as if you're the projector of meaning, as you are simultaneously, with or without psychiatric delay, the recipient of meaning, the product of meaning. Figure that out.
Yeah.
And you could say for fun that because those two apparent dichotomies, the projection of and the receiving of, are a unicity, that the curious sense of self, right, emerges like really purely out of nowhere. Are you imposing meaning? And by imposing meaning, are you receiving meaning? Or are you receiving meaning and by receiving meaning, imposing meaning? And what is the, you know, the genesis of the movement of mind and the movement of association, and the superstructure, which may be, you know, as thin as cotton candy. What's the superstructure of my sense of self? I mean, you add just a little bit of saliva to it and it's gone. Right? You got a giant ball of cotton candy and with the it just
the residual
flavor. Yeah. Right? It's spun carbon, right? Spun sugar. So your big fat ego is nothing more or less than spun sugar as the concomitant projection and receipt of what can be referred to as meaning. And that body of meaning is happening, you could say, as a, a plethora of hysteria, a streaming of imagination, of implication. And how marvelously quickly and adroit the streaming of implication is. So if you look at all the things that you can say about yourself or about your life experience, you'll see that to a T, all of it depends on the superstructure, the weave of meaning, which turns out to be meaning is circumloquacious. There's no actual anything other than the myth of meaning. Though it may seem as if you can name an object, refer to yourself as a subject, plan for your future, win a lottery ticket, or lose your life savings in the Ponzi scheme, nothing ever really happened. And yet you can be so convinced that the movement of meaning has actually defined you and or a world in which you dwell, but doesn't.
That reminds me of the Peterson story he just told. He says people run into problems when the map, the mental map of reality they have, comes in contact with reality and they don't line up.
Yeah.
But he's like, the catch is you don't actually ever come in contact with reality. You're always just coming in contact with what you think is reality.
Yes.
It's another map.
That's right. Yeah. You are like Tron.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're forever condemned to drive a fast car in a bit and byte world.
It does make me wonder how when I watched the movie The Matrix all those years ago.
Yeah.
Why you think once they wake up once, like, that's base reality. I don't know why I never questioned like that.
Yeah.
The same, because it's like,
right,
once it happens once, you're like, oh, just how many more times could this happen? But I guess.
Uh-huh.
Like the 13th floor one where yeah. they never know where they're
yeah.
there's never any
yeah. Yes. To suggest that there is no actual secular reality in which you find yourself as a locomoting, corporeal, self-proclamating agent that, from Richard's point of view, withholds his or her seminal fluid, is like, what? 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 And so all the worrisomeness that accompanies the thrill of a lifetime is made out of the hypnotic implication of the myth of meaning. But all you can find is the myth of meaning. Because that which might be, let's say, poetically transcendent of the myth of meaning isn't actually findable. One is hoping to have a liberation experience to dwell in a higher realm. But there is no higher realm. And so even the loveliest of catharses, I'm sorry. You got nothing. Ungots.
I mean, reality only seems to be a word that tries to describe some consensual thing which can't possibly be.
You know, yes.
So, I mean, in a way, you could say, well, there's the reality for every person at every moment or whatever. And it's like, well, in that case, there's no reality.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just too wifty.
Yeah, it's wifty. Yep.
Reality is wifty.
I get wifty.
Just hearing your name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, what might one mean to suggest that this, whatever that implies, is real? Is actual. I mean, well spoken. but without implication.
Yeah, doesn't move me.
It was like, you know, thanks for sharing.
Yeah,
thanks. You know, the next coffee's on me.
That was helpful.
Yeah. So I mean, it's fun or maddening or both.
Maddeningly fun.
Yep. To like just consider what's arising in your so-called present experience, whether it's sensual or emotional or mental or textural or trans, whatever. And what the fuck is it? And if you're not supplying the narrative, wouldn't it be kind of like a funny backdoor into something as silly as liberation? That instead of going running forward, you know, to the guru's feet, metaphorically or otherwise, to submit yourself for a cathartic revelation, which of course is again part of your immortality, right, project, because life is, you know, was so intimidating. I would, you know, place myself under the wing of an enlightener, right, just for a few minutes relief, like you would shade on a hot day, yeah, or some coolness on a, or warmth on a cold day, yeah, that can go either way. But wouldn't it be kind of fun instead of, like, you know, running ferociously into a life of devotion, Hindu repetition, self-congratulatory celibacy, mono diets, brown jackets, and notches on your gun belt as you kill the Buddha on the road? If you just kind of backed away slowly from the myth of meaning. You could leave the spiritual accomplishment in the hands of people better able to handle it than you. This is the catch-22 of trying to resolve the unpleasant trees of being someone or being something through negotiating with the myth of meaning. You're toast. Because the myth of meaning is what is conjuring the sense of the restless self in the first place. So why would you engage, you know, why would you engage a thief to sell your belongings? Much, so much simpler than all the fanfare that the world's honored religions would have one believe. And that includes the accusatory heaviness of the bullshit Course in Miracles. Just tiptoe the fuck out of here. And that could mean availing yourself of nature, but it doesn't have to mean that. It's quite at hand, you know, in the midst of any and all terrariums. Yeah, what if it turns out to be so absurdly simpler than you ever dared imagine? and that the gate, the wormhole, and the portal is the unspeakable majesty of present experience. That, if not punctuated with the weird coming, concomitant coming and going of meaning, projection and receipt of meaning, just drops open. Just drops open. And that can include the, you know, hoped for closure or resolution of our emotional confusions, of our karmic confusions, of the, you know, the texture of vague loyalties to so-called prior life experience that shape our fears and hidden agendas.
I remember many years ago, before computers. So I don't know where I saw it. Maybe I just read about it. Sufi Sam.
Yeah,
Sufi Sam. He would just like dance and he might say interesting things, but his main thing was just like dancing around being a nut, you know. And I just remember thinking, well, this guy could be crazy, you know. This guy, you know. I mean, and that's when I was like kind of interested in the whole idea of Sufism and stuff like that.
Sure.
But he seems more and more to me to be like, man, I think he had the right thing going. You know? I wonder if there's any YouTubes of him.
Yeah. It's less threatening to be the product of a sumptuous portfolio of indulgent stupidity than it is just to back away slowly from the myth of meaning.
Only the meaning can be threatened.
That's where that Course of Miracles quote, right, makes some pithy sense, right? The real can't be threatened, only the unreal, yeah, right? That's the implication of if the, you know, the movement or association with meaning is seen through, then that which is real, you know, is unharmable, unthreatenable.
It seems like it could be a trap, let's say. I don't know. Because if you think you've seen through the... I don't even remember what you said.
That makes two of us.
The myth of meaning. If you think you've seen through the myth of meaning, then you're, like, holding on to that.
Oh, yeah, no, you...
It's just another myth of meaning.
See how layered it is. I mean, it's like, you know, Philo dough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At every click of the watch or click of your attention, a whole brand new universe of meaning and implication and sensuality and time and identity are laid out like a sumptuous buffet and you don't know whether to go first to the shrimp cocktail or to the vegan muffins. I mean, part of our confusion is that this is such a vast buffet. Of improvisational mystery,
yeah.
That we don't really know what to do with ourselves. Don't ask me how or why we appear to stay comfortably or uncomfortably within the same familiar grooves of what I think my life is, or how I'm, you know, living it or getting through a day with some degree of pain management and a little pinch of joy. And that there is a so-called meaning-making machine sitting on top of your shoulders doesn't mean you're in control of anything or in receipt of anything or that anyone could possibly respond to your needs, wants, entitlements, and demands. You're absolutely hallucinatorially appearing. And in the midst of this, you know, grandeur, hallucinatory grandeur, we become indignant. How strange. You're being broadcast, you know, by infinity, and still it's easy to become indignant. No wonder this species should go out of business. Wow. It's like emptiness just isn't enough. You have to then be a light worker. You mean emptiness is just no good? It's not enough for you? You also need to be a light fucking worker? Well, Marco Polo. Let's get on board with the Pleiadian agenda and help heal the world. Wait. Reel that back just a little bit. Just a little bit. Yeah. But if you really want to become a member of that club, you'll need to get a monogrammed sweater vest. We are so frightened and intimidated by intimacy, liberating intimacy, that we'd much rather sign up for a convoluted cosmology of childish lies so that we could, you know, like align ourselves with the righteous side of chaos. Good luck with that. I know, sacred wonder is such a drag. I really would rather be a light worker. I mean, there's so much healing to do. And I do have a message for the world. I mean, don't you think that asking four questions and turning it around will just turn this fucktard shithole into a golden age?
Better off wearing sweater vests.
Jeannie Zandi wants to change the world, and Byron Katie wants to change the world, and John Sherman wants to change the world. Adolf Hitler was interested in changing the world, and you wonder if there's much of a difference.
Fake news.
Oh, that's fake news. Yeah. There was no Holocaust, and my hair's not orange.
Someone used the word air quotes.
Air quotes.
They're like, when you're dealing with Trump's Twitters, just consider them that there's like air quotes around.
Yeah.
Okay, we've gone from fake news to air quotes.
We've gone from playing air guitar, which was a noble pastime, to air quotes. So you can see Twitter. That the IQ is just declining rapidly. God. Yeah, I'm in possession of astrological knowledge and Ayurvedic knowledge and Western occultism. Yeah, I've read books. I can do your chart. I can do everyone's chart too. You're fucked. You're
everything.
And you're going to lose it all.
And you're probably going to die.
You can look forward to that.
Really? You must be a Sag. You're fucked and you're going to lose it all. You must be a Gemini. You're fucked and you're going to lose it all. Well, when you put it that way, let's be celibate. Thanks, Dick. Oh boy. Meaning is so disorienting that, you know, we become vulnerable in our aching existential gullibility for consensus, for agreement. So it actually feels so much better to have a body of religiosity or superstition that justifies my my, you know, actual agenda to subjugate. To violate and to exploit.
You don't have to really, you're not responsible for compassion either, I don't think.
No.
So, there's a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good reason. You know, we're not talking about IQ knowledge. But we're not talking about, you know, so-called emotional IQ either. Yeah, I know. We're going to fail that test. Right? Spot quiz, emotional IQ, I got to go to the bathroom and get a cigarette. Yeah. Can I get a hall pass?
I mean, I read a book.
I have a book.
I
read the back cover.
I've heard that there's nature, but I've never found my way to it. Yeah, I got it. I ordered something from Amazon.
A terrarium.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, thankfully, perhaps dubiously speaking, dubiously.
There's a sponge called the Dobie, and of course I like always mess up and tell my clients, I'm like, yeah, I think it's called the Dobie.
Oh, the Dobie.
Try to stop walking around saying Dobie to all your clients.
It's 1-0, not 2. Think the Dobie brothers. That'll help you remember
yeah,
it.
Right.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
They're like, all she does is say the word Dobie.
Doobie doobie doo.
She's a runner.
She's into the classics.
No, I'm not a stoner.
Hey man, I'm like not a stoner.
Really, I'm not a stoner.
You know.
Are you feeling this? I mean, are you feeling this?
I am not a stoner.
Tally over here. Now that's a stoner. I wasn't pointing at you, by the way.
That's not Tally.
It's not, I thought you were pointing at Beth, but I was like, that's just not believable, so it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. You know, it's like, hey, get on with it. Well, you know, we're supposed to be like, you know, getting enlightened here. Ooh, 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 ooh. Doobie doobie doo. Do doobie doobie. You know, I want meat and fodder, and I want to be able to disagree with shit.
Fornication.
I want fornication, and I want to be able to agree with shit. Yeah. Yeah, that's working.
Working really well.
Anything that you do or don't do, I'll wait.
And now for a brief commercial. I gave them that as a gift, and they're like, thanks.
Yeah, thanks
like
a lot.
Like, if they're runners, they can't get rid of it, you know? They're like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now they pour it in here. Now I can't get it out.
It's going to get a little crazy glue.
Hasn't been that long, has it? 2 months?
Get the crackle.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's just the new machine.
Just take the batteries out, you're good to go.
Nice.
Or you should remove the door and put something funny in there that the kids don't want to see.
Yeah, a tiny little Matt Con doll. Hey, kids.
Wear your sweater vest.
Wear a sweater vest. And remember, pray to the Pleiadians. Ah, mommy.
I'm surprised we haven't seen Ken the Conspiracy Man in a while.
Hmm.
Oh.
Well, this is, you know, this might be too low-key. Might not be enough going on here to keep the average New Age bear happy.
Especially one that thinks he's living it up, and more so than everyone else. They're like, all right, well, that's...
He's the guy that makes the Fridays, if anything, right?
Yeah, he's lively. A lively old chap.
Oh, yeah.
Seems to be.
Yep.
He's in everything is awesome mode.
Yeah. Chemtrails and toe jam.
Everything is awesome. I'm drinking my coffee.
Drinking my coffee in a Lego cup.
How was the Lego movie?
I just watched the original. I like it. I loved
it. Good reviews, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I was like, I couldn't watch it, and then I watched it. I was like, it's good.
Yeah, I heard
it's
like
funny.
A great shock.
Yeah. I mean, the beginning is
so you did see it.
Hard to get past the like Lego. You're like
the Legoness.
It's like you can't get great quality. I mean, but it's funny. And their little story that they put together for Legos, it's good, you know.
Did you see it online or at the movie store?
Fandango Now on my TV for $2.
Yeah.
SDs.
Each?
Three. For like 24 hours, yeah.
Like 24 hours?
Yeah, that's on the cheaper end of their, they're having some kind of $2 Lego movie.
It's actually
supposed
to be like great. I mean, the reviews have been like tremendous.
Go off on
the Lego
movie. I'll have to see it. $2
I heard the Logan's reviews were really good too. You saw it, right? IMAX or something?
Which one?
Logan.
Yeah. We did, yeah. Yeah, we saw Logan in IMAX, right?
We also saw something else in IMAX.
Kong, Skull Island.
Oh, wow. So that was someone on the
camera. It's very physically destructive.
Wow. Yeah.
It's just like watching a giant ape smash things or what?
Pretty much.
Very visceral. It was like, wow.
He looks, because he looks like human-esque.
Oh.
Yeah, well, he's a very sympathetic figure.
The ape?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks like, when I was like, that doesn't look like a chimp anymore. That looks like a...
It's
got a lot of noise in it and movement and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're really, you know, you're on the set in IMAX 3D with Kong thing.
Really
it's amazing. People weren't running out of their seats, you know, toward the back of the theater to get away from the gobbling creatures. Yeah. Total fun. With the you know, effortless cessation of meaning. You're done. At hand. This is why many of the yogas encourage and emphasize a shift from narrative consciousness, which is the fermentation of the neocortex, to textural consciousness, which is the arousal of the hindbrain. Yeah, so in Kashmiri yogas, though a lot of it can be very heady, the practicality of the Kashmiri Shaivistic yoga is the shifting of the locus of attention from the neocortex to the hind brain. But the hind brain isn't so much a location as it is the juicy arousal of diffuse attention. The neocortex is graspy.
Yeah. Pinpointy.
Yeah, right, graspy. The, right, the, excuse me, the imposition of meaning and the concomitant receipt of the implication of meaning, which is the imposition of meaning, right, since they're the same, and you can't really discern at all the difference or the chicken or the egg of the rolling nature of the seduction of meaning itself, That's the attraction of the neocortex. Not exactly, metaphorically, of course, right? Yeah.
Does the neocortex serve no purpose then?
Well, there is no neocortex, and only it would ask if there were a purpose. The hindbrain.
Well, the hindbrain can't really ask.
Yeah, no, the hindbrain is not interested in purposefulness. The neocortex pretends to hijack the golden radiant nature of attention by asking such questions, which is both the projection and receipt of the myth of meaning.
You know, in terms of meditation,
yeah,
for example, where alluded to the, you know, the studies that have been done on it, stuff like that. And there's this thing that comes, you know, I guess these different waveforms come from different parts of the brain. And and I know that the most chilled out kind of frame of mind, or however you want to put it, comes when there's this just like, you know, real long wave, or I can't.
The long wave.
You know, it's a very relaxed, unified.
Verse of gamma for delta.
Yeah, I forget. I used to know that shit, and I forgot it all. But it's, you know, it's not like one takes precedence. It's that they all sort of flow together. And it seems to me that maybe that's why humans maybe have, well, both more difficulty, but maybe more depth. Or something like that. Who knows? It's all conjecture, you know. But then there's something to be said with the whole brain idea.
Well, sure. There's always something to be said with any idea, whether it's, you know, the brain or the anus. Throw a little Borat in there.
What did he call it?
Never mind.
The anus.
Please explain.
It's a scientific term.
Trying to put Pamela Anderson in a sack.
Pamela.
Yeah. So the right, what can be referred to as the hindbrain is not really a location. It's, you know, it's a metaphor for, and this is the practical and deliberate yoga. I mean, we're not just talking, you know, fairy tale philosophy. You know, in the Kashmiri and similar traditions, as one engages with the textural practicality of the literal presence of attention, then you, I mean, dare I say, willfully, entertainingly, as a skill set, as a yoga, as a play thing, shift the attention so it's not hijacked by the myth of meaning, but recedes and enjoys the long wave of diffusion, so that the radiant and inclusive nature of experiencing is non-specific. And that's the home ground of your liberation, right? Learning how to conjure or notice, when it occurs organically, the long wave. And being, therefore, you know, willing, if not just enough, attentive enough, to rest in it. And here it is. This is the long wave. Present experience is the portal to the cessation of narrative consciousness. There's no struggle. There's no genesis. There's no author. There's no deliverable. There's no delay, right? The neocortex has one, really only one powerful so-called advantage, which is the myth of delay. Like, I've heard that if you go into nature, things become much more...
You are misrepresenting.
Yeah. Well, I'll take advantage of whatever I can. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm certainly exploitive that way. Yeah. But you can see that the movement of being the concomitant projector and recipient of the myth of meaning thrives on delay, is delay. And it's that delay that suggests the hubris of individuation. Well, now I have to go see a therapist to deal with all of the shitty things that happened to me, you know, as the, victim of delay. I mean, that's bullshit. Is this being felt on a delay circuit? Right? The myth of meaning requires the myth of delay, is the myth of psychological time, is the myth of individuation through the presumption of having an opinion or a coordinate, an expectation, a justification. But there is no such thing. There's just the long wave.
So mindfulness has always been, I've never been totally clear about it, because to me it sort of suggests not going back into that, whatever, if you want to say hindbrain, but more like considering each thing that happens or something with each thing that you encounter, being mindful.
Yeah.
Minding the shop.
Yeah.
Kind of selfing, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so to
right.
me it's like,
sounds like your mind is always full.
Yeah.
No. Well, this is the dilemma. It's the dilemma of, let's say, using the Western version, like as in Jon Kabat-Zinn and friends, absurd version of mindfulness. But again, this also is a, I'll use the word ancient just to make it, mystical. The ancient quarrel between the Buddhist nature of revelation and the Hindu nature of revelation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Because you'll find in the Hindu Vedic tradition the celebration of, let's just say, something like Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Talk about long wave.
Yeah.
But the Buddhist liberation doesn't necessarily rely on or esteem the Nirvikalpa Samadhi. It kind of esteems non-plussed mindfulness of the ordinary texture of so-called present experience. Yeah. Yeah. But of course, if you look into both traditions with a little more under the soil, you'll see just the reverse is also true, that there are aspects to the Vedic non-dual traditions which are crisply present, and aspects to the jhanic side of Buddhist practice, which are exotic states.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, both of them lie for good measure. This way we have a reason to have a ball game. You know, make me one with everything. And it's, and, you know, to get really strangely cogent about it, just for fun, there is no mutual exclusivity between the long wave as a, you know, right, out of body delirium, and the crisp attentivity, you know, of Woody Woodpecker. Yeah, there is no, really, there's no discernible difference between one and another. So your immersion, which is ongoing nonstop and is never actually interfered with, can demonstrate any old which way it pleases. To be an adventuresome, engaged yogi suggests that you're not just the passive recipient of narrative consciousness walking around, you know, in the world of your own creation, quarreling with everyone and everything, looking for the next fix. Though that's a way to live. You can also flip the switch and, can we say, participate in the demonstration of mystical union in an interactive manner. Here it is. This is mystical union. You want to turn it into the imagination of your life? Well, knock yourself out. Have fun. Make it the best life you can. Be the best that you can be. And then go to foreign lands and kill people of a different color. You may as well put a fine point on it. Or you can be the best that you can be and, you know, say participate in, communal nonviolence. The wanting is the hint of individuated restlessness, which feels the world as an insufficiency, as an irritability, as a what's in it and what's next for me, where the long wave is so dumbfounded that it doesn't suffer from those same, call them criticisms.
Mm-hmm. It's outside of time, you know. It's,
yeah,
doesn't recognize any, the tedium the way that the other.
Yes, time. That's right. It doesn't suffer the tedium.
It doesn't suffer the tedium.
Yeah. And ta-da, from so-called moment to moment to moment, as if there were any at all, is the curious leapfrogging of being the projector of meaning and the recipient of meaning and being the sufferer of restlessness and the irresolute enjoyer of the long wave. You know, choose your poison. Where's Jocelyn tonight?
Yes, indeed. Not sure she would do that.
And Monique. Where's Monique?
Monique.
Our French friend on the call the other day.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Oh, you had a French friend on the call the other day?
Yeah, yeah.
Look out for French.
I know. She sounded pretty sexy.
Because
she's French.
Feisty.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just can't get the envelope thing together.
The envelope, please.
Well, thanks, everyone. Any questions?
I actually have a question.
Let's address it.
And
let's dispense with it.
So I appear to be more critical than I've ever been. What the hell's up with that?
Well, that's a sign of intelligence. Hi, Dave.
Jeff just did a really get on the dance for us. You missed it. But you can still give me your money.
I'll give you some money. I have it.
But your question.
Hey.
Yeah.
Boy, we got a four-legged here.
So, you're wondering what's right with you?
I guess people are annoying.
Oh, is this the first time you've noticed it?
Oh, I'm much more critical than I've ever been.
Yeah.
I don't think I fit to live with anymore.
Wow. Becoming more sensitive to something.
Yeah,
I say that because I get irritable. I think I'm just
because it makes you feel good about yourself. That's why you say it.
No, I'm not sensitive in that way. I mean, not oversensitive.
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel like I'm noticing things I never noticed before, or I'm just old and cranky.
Okay.
I don't know which.
How's your body?
Well, let's go with the former.
Okay.
You know, I mean, just to be polite. I mean, this is, can't this be in equal measure sanguine beyond comprehension and short-tempered to a fault?
I would say so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Range.
Yeah. You're enjoying a broader range,
maybe. That's my favorite word with it.
There you go.
Two words.
20 to 20.
No, I haven't done any range.
Yeah.
But you know, what it also brings up is how the fuck did I not see that before?
Right. Well, ignorance is bliss. And you were enjoying...
No, it's like critical, self-critical also.
Well, sure. It's, once that wonderful demon of criticism is let loose, you know, no one is safe. Mm. Right. Why not?
Right, it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, you have some family dynamics that might play a part of this too, you know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? But it's not. I'm not talking about in the family. The people that are like, it's other people that I
displacement
used to hang around with, and I'm like, oh.
Well, from a you know,
what the hell was I thinking?
We could borrow from the work of J.P. Spears, and recognize that you know we are indeed. Enviably spiritually special.
Right, boy. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to miss out on that shit, right?
Okay, I knew. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so look what happens. I mean, any quality of subtle discernment that occurs in the brightness of mind can be used in the service of generous sanguinity or vile, you know, disingenuous, right, dismissal of everyone and everything that's not thinking and feeling the way that I am. And, okay, well, of course, but of course. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this let's just say the robustness, right? The desire, of creation, what does it really love doing? Role play. What do we see? Role play.
Yeah.
On a scale that is truly incomprehensible. You know, at the so-called biologic or photonic or periodic or whatever scale you want to look at. The insect kingdom, the mineral kingdom, you know, the black hole kingdom, you know, the great Pleiadian brotherhood of, you know, vessels that travel interdimensionally. It's role play.
The Lego movie is good for that.
The Lego movie?
Because they don't know they're Legos, and then they find he's a human, and he's like, what the hell is that? And he's like looking at his little kingdom from outside his kingdom, and he's like, hey, those are my friends.
Yeah.
What are you doing? It's fucking crazy.
Everything is awesome.
But they're role-playing on, everyone's role-playing on different levels.
Yeah.
Layers.
No, I really want to see it.
So, you know, here it is. I mean, I would like to pride myself on being one way as contrasted with another way, and I've made a lot of progress being the way I am now as compared to the way I was like a minute ago, right? And the role play doesn't stop, and our enrollment in the role play makes the role play, you know, more fun, more thrilling. You know what? This can only do one thing. It only can blow smoke up its own ass. That's all it can do. It's not as omniscient, you know, as you might think. It's not like the Wizard of Oz. I mean, he turned out to be not so omniscient either. You know, all he had at his disposal was a balloon. And once he got in it, that was the end of that. Dorothy was like, "There goes hope. There goes hope." The wizard just took off in a balloon.
I heard something. I forget like the specifics of that story, but wasn't it like she found out at the end that she could have just like went home at any time?
Yes.
And like the other like good witch was using her the whole
time. That's what he told her as he was leaving. I think.
And then she woke up from a fever. It's like, oh shit!
You're not suggesting that you've not seen The Wizard of Oz.
I've seen it, you know, 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So I was,
Yeah,
playing
backwards on acid.
There you go. Yeah. It's right. With the Rolling Stones' Satanic Majesties in the background. Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
It's for real.
It's for real.
Everything they thought they needed was already there. They just needed a journey and somebody to remind them.
Well, that's Peterson. Right?
Have you been watching a lot of Peterson?
First time I checked it out.
That's probably making you crazy.
Over and over.
It reminds me
that shit does it to me.
Makes
me crazy.
Maybe. All right. What's Peterson?
Psychologist, but more than that.
Psychologist named Peterson?
Jordan Peterson, yeah.
Yeah, he's
interesting. Oh, that's right. Okay. He's easy to follow, and I like to have it on in the kitchen.
Start talking to your plant friend and listen to music. Certain questions I have that he doesn't seem to answer.
Thanks, everyone. I hope it was as good for you as it was for us.